Well, good evening, all. It's Devorah Kresniansky from Adayat. And tonight we'll be talking about Shalom Bayis and a peaceful Yentif, and just a little bit about the Adayat organization. Adayat is about empowering couples and enriching relationships. And to that end, our programs offer the tools and mindsets to make one's relationships the most enriching and empowering force of your life. And we have different workshops, the website, which is adayad.org, all A's, A-D-A-I-A-D.org. That's A-D-A-I-A-D.org. And we have our daily marriage tips or relationship tips called Just One Thing, the nice and short. And you can get that on Facebook, Instagram, or actually through your WhatsApps. We also have online workshops, courses. We used to have in-person courses. We'll see what happens again after Corona. I have individual coaching in areas such as preparing for marriage, dating, setting up the marriage, invigorating the marriage, and resetting the marriage. And so to that end, like I said, we have many different workshops. And I'm very grateful to Velvel and Esti Lipsker for offering to do this workshop about Shalom Bayis, and specifically around the hectic time of Yentif. So, Velvel and Esti, can you talk a little bit about yourselves and why you are so passionate about this, and then just jump right into your...
Thank you for joining. So, just a very short synopsis of the passion that me and Velvel have about this topic. So, we've been married, Baruch Hashem, 16 years, and things weren't always so great. When I mean great, I mean communication and getting along and... learning how to negotiate life. So we did a lot of therapy work and just a lot of individual work to try to come to a place of understanding each other and so therefore being able to communicate and have, you know, the best marriage that we could. So I do feel passionate to talking about how we can all continue to better our marriages, and especially when it comes to Yom Tov. So I'm going to turn the phone over to my husband, Velvel.
Hi, everybody. My name is Velvel Lipsker. As he mentioned, communication. When we first got married, it was like the dirtiest words. And it was always spoken about, I have to communicate. And I had no idea what that word even means. Like, we're talking. What do you mean? And I actually learned this in our marriage counseling, that talking, communicating are not the same thing at all. And talking is something that most people pick up naturally. And communicating is, in my experience, something that people do not necessarily pick it up naturally. Some people do, many people don't. But it's a learnable skill. So we're talking about Yom Tov. A friend of mine, his brother-in-law is a therapist, and he told me, you know, every business has its season. So, for example, the paper supply stationery stores are busy before Yom Tov. Beginning of the school year, this time of year. And accountants are busy in April, before tax day. And that therapy, the word he uses, you know, that's when people are busy. So that's when, because after Yom Tov, everything builds up. When Yom Tov comes around, by that time, things are ready to explode. So the main thing that I learned about Yom Tov is two very, very important things. And number one, the first thing I learned was that Yom Tov is very stressful. Now, I don't have to show mean that Yom Tov is yeah, that. Mm-hmm. So, of course, Yom Tov is, number one, Yom Tov is wonderful. It's a special time of year. It's a very holy time. It's a time that we could experience a lot of joy. It's a time that we feel close to Hashem. So what I mean to say that Yom Tov is a stressor, I don't mean Chas Shalom something negative. It's simply like if you're putting stress on a beam, so it could carry X amount of pounds. That's what we mean when we say stressing. Stressing a beam, stressing a string, stressing a rope. You're pulling on it. So Yom Tov is a stressor in the sense that it's very, very taxing. It takes a lot. It takes a lot out of us, first of all, physically. Yom Tov is very expensive. Yom Tov is a big change of schedule. Many people have to take off many days of work Yom Tov. Yom Tov is a lot of late nights. So the first time that I heard this concept that Yom Tov is stressful, I was like, what do you mean Yom Tov is so enjoyable? And I had to realize, yes, of course Yom Tov is wonderful and it's a stressor that we want, but it's something which we cannot ignore, cannot make believe, oh, it's no big deal. It is a very, very big deal, and something that should be given its due respect, in the sense, like in Miami, we say respect the ocean. It's beautiful, it's wonderful, but understand that it's a big, huge force. So we learned also that respect the Yom Tov, respect everything that it brings along with it. And the solution to that, for me, is to keep it simple. I'm going to pass the phone to Esti now.
You know, it says in the in Halacha, it said before Yom Tov, you should prepare 30 days before. You know, Kaidim Achag, 30 days, you should talk about the Yom Tov, get ready. And I want to just say that in this area of Shalom Bayis, of getting ready for Yom Tov, it's also important to prepare before the Yom Tov. And I'll talk a little bit about what I mean by that. That it's very important to plan ahead. When we plan ahead, everyone knows that when you plan a wedding or bar mitzvah or an upsharnish, you know, the more you plan in advance, who's going to pick up the flowers, when is the flowers going to pick, you know, where are they going to be delivered, who's picking up the challah. So when you plan ahead, usually things go smooth. And when it comes to Yom Tov, many couples make the assumption that, you know, it'll just go fine, whatever, we'll figure it out, you know, we'll just play it by ear. And from my experience, at least for me, in my marriage, the playing it by ear really didn't work. Because for the simple reason that we're two different people who have different needs and different expectations and different likes and dislikes. So I'll just give an example. For example, you know, one spouse may really enjoy a lot of guests. The other spouse may really not enjoy a lot of guests, specifically also certain kinds of guests or certain families. And if we don't communicate and discuss beforehand, oh, how many meals do you want to host? How many meals do you want to host? Or about being a guest. Some people love to be guests. Another couple spouse may not enjoy being guests. They'd rather be home. And these kinds of things can cause a lot of friction and tension, a lot of displeasure on one of the spouse's part, and which causes so much extra aggravation on the Yom Tov, which could easily be avoided by just discussing beforehand, you know, okay, let's plan it out. Who's going to show with you? Who's staying? Are we going out? Are we going in? How many do you want? And basically to learn how to compromise, which is my next point, which is, marriage, I heard the best line that I've heard about marriage is from the marriage therapist that we worked with, and he said, marriage is a negotiation of needs. And I thought it was profound, because, you know, we think of marriage, sometimes we have these unrealistic expectations, what's marriage, we don't know, love, it's this, it's that. But if you really boil it down, it's two people that both have needs, and it's about negotiating the two needs. And if we look at it like that, then, you know, I used to think I had no needs. You know, I learned that I did. Maybe I just assumed I didn't, or I just expected them to be filled and then they weren't. But if we can see it like that, then if we sit down and negotiate, what do you want, what do I want, and how we can find a third alternative. I love the idea of a third alternative, which means that it's not my way, it's not your way, it's our way. And when it comes to Yom Tov, if a couple can get together before, it doesn't have to be 30 days, it could be a week before, the earlier the better. I just want to say a little anecdote. I mean, when I was sitting up with my husband to plan this talk, it popped into my head, like, oh my goodness, I forgot to tell my husband that we were invited somewhere for Yom Tov. And I said right away, by the way, this and this person invited us for Yom Tov. And this is just a habit that we've developed over the years to really go through the Yom Tov of, you know, what do you want to do? Where do you want to go? How many meals do you want to eat out? How many meals do you want to eat in? Et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. What kind of shul do you want to go to? Which shul? All these things really help make that the actual Yom Tov is smooth and enjoyable and not as chaotic and just enjoyable for the kids, for the family. So that's the idea, that everybody gets their needs met and then everybody can enjoy when the actual Yom Tov comes. And I just want to say, because some questions came in anonymously about, in general, marriage, what if one spouse is not happy? Do both spouses need to, you know, think the marriage is okay for it to be okay? And I think that this point about, you know, of course both people need to be happy. One person being happy, that's not a marriage. A marriage means that two people are satisfied with what's going on. And if one person is dissatisfied, then that means the whole marriage has to recalculate and see what we can do to make both sides happy.
Okay, I want to pick up on the point that Esti just finished off. You know, this idea of one partner is happy. One could say, you know, I'm happy, my spouse is not happy. Well, if your spouse is not happy, that itself should make you happy, unhappy. So one of the things that I learned very early on, so somebody that was coaching us, he's not a certified therapist, but somebody I was talking to, and he said, Zalva, how many people live in your house?
excluding children? I said, two. And he said, wrong. There's three people. There's you, your wife, and your marriage. And what I learned was that there's me, and I need to be nurtured as a person, and I need to get my needs met. And then there's Esty, and she is a person, and she needs to get her needs met. And then there's the coupleship. As an independent living, this is what the term they used me, that they told me, that the coupleship is an independent living, breathing thing that needs to be fed. Because it's very, very easy to drift apart. And this is something that happens over Yom Tov for me a lot because there's so much going on and because a lot of good things going on. And it's very easy for me to drift off kind of into my own world. You know, as a man, I go to shul a lot, or if we're going to somebody's house, or when we do visit New York, for us, that's where our families are from. We're visiting family, and we kind of get absorbed, and it's all wonderful. We get absorbed into the family, into the relatives, or to whatever's going on, and we're both having a wonderful time, but at some point, the marriage, meaning to say the coupleship, and I'll expound on what I mean by that in a minute, begins to disintegrate by itself because nobody's feeding it. So one of the things that we learned in therapy is this concept of a team, that we're on the same team. In other words, not only am I doing what I need to do, and not only is my spouse doing what my spouse needs to do, and not only are we getting our needs met, we're actually working together, we're on the same team. And one of the things our therapist taught us, the tool was, and we ask each other when things are getting heated up, who's the enemy? I'll say, Esty, who's the enemy? Esty will say, Velva, who's the enemy? And I'm going to remember that the enemy is the stress, or whatever it is. The enemy is the fact that funds are tight. The enemy is that one of our children are not doing well in school. The enemy is that I'm uncomfortable in which shul to go to. The enemy is that I'm feeling this kind of pressure. Because if I don't do that, then what automatically happens is that we make each other the enemy. For some reason, I turn who's the enemy, and my spouse is the enemy. My spouse is the one giving me a hard time. And I have to remember that the enemy is the fact that I'm not getting enough sleep. The enemy is that I have to take too many days off work and I'm worried about what's going to happen. And I'm just turning to the nearest person. And when I'm able to do that, I'm able to get sympathy from my spouse. I tell her, you know, and very often, you know, I'm sorry I made you the enemy. I apologize. I'm making you the enemy. You're not the enemy. And to say those words, and originally it sounds very, very plastic, very artificial, but it's something we learned how to do. Say it. Just say it. Say it. I'm sorry I made you the enemy. You're not the enemy. Here's what's really going on. So a tool that we use very often, we use it all year, but especially on this, is we do a check-in. And there's a format that Esty learned, and we use, and again, it's one of those things that originally sounds very artificial because it sounds like you're following the script and it's supposed to be more natural, but it works. It works if we follow the script. And what happens is, and I'll share the script in a moment, but what happens is that if we're doing well, we don't need to have the script. We don't need to have this check-in because we're doing well. When we're not doing well, when things will feel like a breakdown of communication, that's when we need to use it. So, for example, if we're out for Yom Tov and we ate out three meals in a row, then, you know, maybe before Kiddush or waiting for the host to send a call, you know, we'll call each other and say, let's do a check-in. Let's kind of reconnect. Let's remember on the same team. The format for the check-in that we do is we ask each other five questions. Specific questions. Question number one is an appreciation. I appreciate about you, something I appreciate about you. And I focus on saying something positive about my spouse. It could be something personal. I appreciate the fact that you watched your kids this morning, I could sleep in. Or something, I appreciate the fact that so the appreciation could either be something personal, I appreciate something you did for me, or just something about you, or something you did for somebody else, something kind. It doesn't have to be what you do for me. It could just be, you know, I appreciate the fact the way you talk to the kids, or I appreciate the way you get along with your siblings, or whatever it is. Just an appreciation. That's question number one. Question number two is any news. Now, news could be something I forgot to tell you. News is, oh, by the way, I have an appointment. I have an engagement next Monday. News could be something that happened at work today. I want you, something emotional, or news could be something I'm feeling, something I want you to know about me. So, or like practical. So it's either one, but something new. News means new information that I would like you to know. Next question, and now that is not solution oriented. It's just stating facts. The next question is solution oriented. I have a problem. Here's the solution I'm proposing. The problem is that we're not getting enough sleep. Or the solution is that maybe we should have a better routine for bedtime, and we'll discuss what that is another time. The next question is quizzes, which is very beautiful. It's, I wonder what's going to happen. That's the opposite of the previous question, is that it's not solution-oriented at all. It's, I wonder what the something is going to look like. I wonder if I'm going to end up enjoying Simchas Torah. I wonder if, and it can be short-term something, I wonder what's going to happen in the next 5 hours, or long-term, I wonder where we're going to be living in 5 years from now, whatever I'm feeling at the moment. And the last one is hopes and dreams, which is my hope and dream is, and again, it could be my hope and dream is that I get to bed on time tonight, or my hope and dream is that that my son goes to Yeshiva Neretz Yisrael. It could be something far off or something big. I hope we live in a too far house, whatever it is. Now, in the format, so we take turns. So one will do appreciation, the other will do appreciation. One will do news, the other will do news. One will do problem solution, the other will do problem solution. One will do quizzes, the other one will do quizzes. One will do... The important thing is that when it comes to the check-ins, a big issue is who's going to go first. And usually... it's whoever is not doing so well. Like for example, if I say let's do a check-in, but could you please start? Because it can be difficult sometimes to start. So I'll ask, or Esty will say, let's do a check-in, and I'll start. Or if I'm feeling good, or I'm not feeling so good, could you start? Like to get it going. But it's helpful because we have a very very specific format, and we could do it, and we can use it always to reconnect and get on the same team. I'll pass.
Okay, thank you, Vel. So I'm just going to really conclude with two more points, and then I guess we could take questions. So the first point that I want to just conclude is, and expound on, is the keep it simple thing that my Velvel mentioned. So I really feel that Yom Tov is stressful as is, and I just think that in general for Shalom Bias and in general for life, you know, dumbing things down, meaning taking the notch down, is always helpful all around. So meaning... you know, if we had no guests, Yom Tov would still be stressful. You know, because like I said, late nights, change of schedule, you know, so I just think that it's so important to keep in mind that we like to, I guess I'll talk as a woman, a lot of us women maybe have the same thing, or maybe men in their own way, you know, for bringing, Sukkot always is a big stress for me, Sukkot, you know, how many for bringing are you going to go to? I can't handle you being out every night, et cetera, et cetera. So it's really important to, if we could try to, you know, if you want to invite 5 guests, invite 4. If you want to invite 3, you know, lower the notch. Lower the notch just below the threshold, not over the threshold. Because, you know, 1 extra guest can really spill and topple the whole atmosphere of the couple in the house. And it's just, it's not worth it. I mean, for me, so time and time again, I've learned, you know, that extra meal and guest, was it worth, you know, me and Velvel, you know, having an extra argument? So I learned over the years that it's not worth it. You know, yeah, it's nice if I invite that new neighbor. But, you know, me and my husband getting along and enjoying Yom Tov and, the kids feeling like there's shalom in the home is ultimately more important than that extra guest. So that's why, you know, going back to the planning part is that when we're planning and checking in, you know, let's try to, on both ends, both spouses, try to lower the notch and bring down the expectations of what I would want, my hopes and dreams. I would like to invite so much, or I'd like to go out every meal. But, you know, so that we can really lower the stress, because Yom Tov is stressful as is, and adding things on. And then I'm just going to conclude with another point about, in general, marriage and, you know, especially Yom Tov time, you know, resentments come up. Things don't go away. You know, a lot of people, a lot of us, myself included, in my early years of marriage, I assumed that, you know, if I'm upset anymore and my husband's not upset anymore, then, I'll just forget about it, you know? Why should I bother? Why should I rock the boat? And what I've learned is that resentments don't go away, and they can build up for years. And if, when we were doing therapy, resentments came up, we were 6 years old. They were like from the first week of our wedding. And it was so interesting to me that I never heard about them, you know, and my spouse never heard of things that I was holding on to. And the idea is that people hold grudges. That's how we, you know, we're kind of wired like that. And so it's so important to, and I wanted to say that I forgot to mention when I said about, you know, planning it. If you sit down with your spouse and you have a really hard time coming up with a solution that works for both people, you may need a third party involved. You know, I need it, and many couples, you know, need that extra help. So don't feel bad if, you know, you sit down and you're like, let's plan Yom Tov, and then it becomes a whole World War III, and no one can seem to compromise or compromise at the point where everybody's happy. Don't feel bad, feel like you need to bring somebody in, because whether it's a Rav, a good friend, a Mashpia, or a therapist, because that third person can be objective and help and teach you how to communicate. But if the communication is not working between you, don't just give up and say, fine, you know what, let's just forget about it. It's not worth it. It is worth it, because every resentment builds up, and it builds up, and then it erodes the marriage. It erodes the trust. It erodes the love that there is. So if a couple's trying to work it out and plan for Yom Tov or life or anything, and or a situation that happened, and it's not going, the conversation, which is what happened to me many, many times, and so we just gave up. You know, I've learned that it's so helpful to have that third person to say, to just, you know, to step in and really, you know, rebuild the, you know, or even learn the communication.
Okay, so connection. Okay, so here's a practical question. Last year, Sukkot, my husband wanted the kids to stay up really late, and I thought practically the kids should go to sleep at a normal hour. This became a huge fight. Do you have any ideas of how we could communicate around that?
We had that same argument many times. My husband wanted to bring them to 770, some chatayra, wake them up in the middle of the night, and I thought it was absurd. And so we went back and forth. And so I think I'm going to give a little bit explanation, describe how we communicate, like kind of give a synopsis of how we have a conversation, if that's okay. So the way we would do it is we would present the problem, like, you know, okay, so and basically we would take turns talking. It sounds funny, but we actually time each other, me and Bevel, especially when it's a heated topic. If it's something that's so heated that we don't get anywhere by just talking about it naturally, so we treat it like it's if it's a timed meeting. And I'll have 3 minutes to share, and Bevel will time me, and basically I get to share everything I want about it, everything I feel about it. He can't interrupt me, he can't ask me questions, he can't say but, he can't. You know, it's just my 3 minutes. I have the mic. His mic is closed, and I get to say everything about why I think it's maybe absurd to go every night dancing. And I share all my feelings. They could be angry. They could be happy. They could be whatever they are. And then after a certain amount of time, because people can only listen for so much without, like, exploding. So then the mic gets handed over to Bevel and then the other spouse, and then same thing, 3 minutes. And we actually go back and forth and back and forth until the matter is kind of resolved. What I mean by that is when everybody gets time to really share, the more you share, the more that comes up, the reasoning, the feeling, the why, you know, because we sometimes, even myself, I'll say, I don't want it, and I have no idea why, but when I get the mic, all of a sudden I start talking, and all of a sudden I just start saying, and it comes up why I didn't even want it, or my feelings about it. So for myself even, it's astonishing what comes up when I get to share uninterrupted. So the idea is that we both get to share, and in those kinds of safe timings, things come up that neither of us realize we even thought or felt. And then, because the more we share how we feel, first of all, the more I can understand my husband's point of view. I don't look at it as crazy so much. He doesn't look at my thing as crazy so much, because he gets to see that I'm not that crazy. There's a reason behind my madness, a logic, a feeling. And the more and more and more you share, and eventually, first of all, you care about the other person more, you start to realize, and it's much easier to come up with a solution that works for both. So one more point I forgot to mention is that after you share, before the other person takes the mic, they sum up what it is that you shared. So what I heard you say was, that's active listening. And then, I say, no, you didn't hear me correctly. You missed that one point. And basically the idea is, did you hear me? Were you listening? You know, because a lot of times we talk and I assume the other person's listening, but they could be thinking about the baseball game. They could be thinking about, you know, their share, or they could be thinking about the fact that I'm wrong the whole time and they didn't even hear what I'm saying. So it's very important to reflect back and say, oh, I heard you say this and this and this. And then we both do the same back. So that way, no messages are getting lost. Everything is truly heard. So that's just a format that really works for us, and it can be used for any topic that's triggering, that's a hot topic, that's, you know, that can't be just discussed in a regular, you know, way.
So I guess in addition to that, like, you have to have these conversations somewhat in advance, because you may have to come back to it another night. For example, you can't come Erev Rosh Hashanah and say, I want to go to my parents tomorrow. or like the day before you have to be able to travel to your parents. There needs to have time for this conversation to actually work it through.
Yeah, you could have it at the last minute and see what happens.
So you won't do it again the next time. And one other question. Our families have very different minhagim. I want to keep some of my family's minhagim, and my husband says that minhagim go according to the husband. Oh, wow. Do you want to go into that?
Okay, I guess I'll take this question. It's my turn. I have the mic now, so I'll talk about it. Okay, so I want to continue and ask these thoughts. So especially when it comes around in Yanim of Minhagim and Halacha, it's very easy for me to fall into the trap of right and wrong, that there's a right way and a wrong way. So, you know, if it's my parents, your parents, okay, fine, or if we're going to eat chicken or fish. But when it comes to these, you know, these there's no compromising on. This is Halacha, or this is Minhag. And the truth is that if I want to fall into that trap of right and wrong, it could be about anything. It could be about who we're supposed to go to. Kibbutz Avayim, does it go to my parents, go to your parents? I could wrap anything in Halacha, and I could always escape to the right and wrong. Especially when it comes to Minhag, it's very important. And I ask myself, why is it important to do the Minhag? Why? Okay, because the husband's right. Okay, fine. Yeah, there is a Halacha like that. Okay, why is that the Halacha? Why is the Halacha that you follow the husband's Minhagim? And what does it mean for me? Baruch Hashem, you know, we both come from regular Baruch family, so our family Minhagim are not that different. Like, the first time I went, after we got married, and I went to say that my wife's family, I was surprised how similar it was. But, of course, there are many different Minhagim, and then there's family Minhagim, family traditions. People have ways of doing things. So as long as once we have a very open discussion, and like Esti mentioned, things come up for me which I didn't even realize, and I say, you know what, this is very meaningful to me because it's something that I have a long memory of. All of a sudden, the openness and the willingness to accommodate the other person becomes very, very clear. And if they cannot be, so this is the appropriate role of compromise. So for example, the Seder in our house, what we do is one night we do it like my family, and one night we do it like Esti's family. That was a simple solution because we have two Sedarim. Or when it comes to Rosh Hashanah, other kinds of Minhagim, I guess this is the importance of Shalom Bayis and having, and bringing God into it, is that when it really is about God's will, then all of a sudden there's room for compromise. If it becomes a real Shalom Halacha, of course, that's what you have a rough for, you know, if it's a real, real issue. But what I discovered for myself is that 95% of the time, it's not something which a Rav needs to give a psak. If it really comes to that, you can ask a Rav for a psak. But usually, there's a lot of feelings involved. There's a lot of deep feelings involved. A lot of they're very good feelings. They're very, very positive feelings. You know, I could say I have memories. You know, I grew up in Crown Heights in those years. I have memories the way it was by the Rebbe, and I want to give over my children. And we could talk about that. You know, what's the importance of that? But the important thing is for me to realize that a lot of this stuff, in addition to Halacha, in addition to Minhag, is also very deeply emotional. And when I could resolve the emotional side of it, then the other details are, you know, fairly easily negotiated. They're fairly easily navigated. Once we get the feelings out in the open, the feelings out of the way, so to speak, then what we do practically usually comes down to a small, it's not usually such a big difference, you know. And it's fine in Ashkenazim and somebody wants to keep kitnias on Pesach or not. So there are many, many Piskei Dinim about that. But in my experience, the difference in the Hagim are usually not that drastic.
Esti, or can I ask the next question?
Sure.
Okay. Another question. My husband has certain family Minhagim of food, and he wants me to cook it. I don't want to. I don't know how to, and I don't want to. I guess it's like, do I have to, I guess the question is, do I have to make these interesting foods or get the recipe or work hard on a recipe that I don't want to make just because my husband wants me to? Or I guess it's also in the way that he presents it more than just that he wants it. Can you talk a little bit to that?
So what I hear in that question is a person feeling resentful about what they're doing. And it's a very dangerous game to play. I actually would say better not to cook the food than cook it with resentment, because resentment can really kill. There's a line about resentment that says it's like taking poison and hoping someone else dies. You know, we're the ones that die, not physically, but spiritually and emotionally and lovingly, I mean, lack of love, when we resent someone. So So I really feel that if somebody is doing something for their spouse and they're not doing it from a place of love, the same goes for a neighbor, whoever else, a sister, a mother, it needs to come from a place of love. And how that can, you know, how that can happen is a whole, you know, obviously these conversations that we spoke about and how you have a conversation is how you talk about it. I don't think that one person demanding of another spouse anything is going to be helpful for the, you know, the relationship. And the idea is that nothing, you know, everything that should go on in the marriage needs to be discussed, explored, shared, and like Bob was saying about the emotions, it's the emotions that lay behind everything. And if we don't share how we feel, I just want to say, I used to, you know, if Elbow did something, like one of the things, you know, early in the years in our marriage, you know, he wouldn't talk to me sometimes for a few weeks or days. And I never thought of saying to him straight out, like, I really don't like that you don't talk to me. Something, it sounds, you know, why wouldn't you just say to the person what you don't like they're doing? And I feel like a lot of us go through marriage doing things or suffering or just, you know, putting up with things that we don't like, we're not okay with, and yet we don't use our voices to share what it is that we're upset about. And on both sides of the spectrum, both spouses, usually a lot of that, it goes on. And the solution is simply communication, which is these kinds of conversations that are constructive, not conversations that end in somebody storming off. But when two people are calm, you know, things need to be negotiated and discussed and how everybody feels, and then they can conclude about what they want to be done. But to do something and not want to do it, if it's not a labor of love, then it's going to not even be received by the other person.
So I'm thinking that in this question is also the, you know, his assumption that she has to be doing all the cooking, and that assumption may not be practical or may not be feel right on one side or the other. So in this case, it's she is assuming that he assumes that she has to be doing all the cooking, and that could be the resentment is in that aspect. Never mind in the specific recipe that he's asking for.
And all of that will come up in a conversation. If there is a conversation about it, then all of that will come up. Like, who said I even need to be cooking? You know, if the emotions are actually brought up, or all the feelings that everybody has, whatever's really going on beneath the surface, if everyone's given a chance to share, both spouses, is everything's going to come up. All, you know, the stuff is going to come up. So that's the idea of truly having everybody having a voice. So that whatever is going on for either of the spouses is coming up. It's not being dormant. It's not just, you know, not being heard.
Very, very important. And do you have anything that you want to wrap up this conversation with? Any wishes to our Shalom Bayis over Yontif?
I'll wrap up, and then I guess Velva will share his bracha. I bench everybody to have a beautiful Yontif. You know, for me, every year that my marriage gets better, my Yontif gets better. You know, I even will make a comment to my husband and be like, I can't believe it. It's like Pesach, we're just enjoying Pesach, or it's Yom Tov, or Sukkot, whatever it is. You know, it's just, it's not even stressful. You know, it's barely stressful. It's not causing me all this anxiety. I'm just enjoying you. I'm enjoying the kids. I'm enjoying, you know, and it's always a shock for me when I'm walking down the street and everybody's feeling happy and contented, and either of us are not, like, you know, really angry at each other, because we live many of those days and years. So I guess my bracha is that, you know, working on your marriage and working on your communication, then you will get to really enjoy the Rosh Hashanah, the Yom Kippur, the Sukkot, because you won't be focusing on how angry you are on your spouse about this or that, or how sad you are that you didn't do this or that, because you could really focus on the actual Yom Tov and appreciate the Yom Tov, as opposed to being focusing on all the other stuff that really can be worked through and cleared, so that the actual Sukkah, you enjoy the mitzvah, and you're not focusing on the fact that, you know, whatever latest resentment, you know, you had that wasn't discussed. And I'll pass the mic. Good night.
First, I want to wish everybody a ksiva chasima tova. There's a new year ahead. And the new year, who knows what the year will bring. It will bring wonderful things. Years ago, when we were going through that stage of buying all the Shalom Bayis books, and one of the books that we read, a great book, I don't want to mention by name, I don't want to do any endorsements, but it said, bring your marriage to its fullest potential. And I remember reading that line. I had no idea what that means. What does it mean, bring your marriage? Your marriage is what it is. And what I discovered and what we discovered is that it's not true, that there's so much potential. Things are good. The famous line from the Friedrich Rebbe that said that if good is good, isn't better better? Things are good, things are wonderful. There's so many treasures there for the taking. If I take the time to sit and discuss it, then all these beautiful menhagim, all these beautiful yamim tovim, could become so much more beautiful. So a bracha to everybody is, go get out there. There's deep, deep, beautiful treasures, and go search them because they're there. They're there to be had. They're to be there to be enjoyed. Have a wonderful and meaningful Tishrei. Thank you.
Thank you, Velvel. Thank you, Esti. And thank you all for joining us tonight.